Hey everybody, welcome to another exciting episode of Data Exposed. I'm your host, Scott Klein, and with me today is Luis. Luis, how are you doing?
Good, thank you. How are you?
Yep, good. It's a pleasure to have you here. Before we get started, I want you to take a second and introduce yourself.
Sure. So my name is Luis Vargas. I'm a program manager on the SQL Server team.
Okay.
I've been with SQL Server and Microsoft for almost 9 years now.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, so
perfect. So today's topic is a good one because I think there's a lot of interest around, especially from the things we can do with this technology. Today we're going to talk about SQL Server and an Azure VM, sort of what you can do with it, best practices, things like that, right? Just
correct.
Kind of at a high level to begin with, because we'd love to come have you back and do some deeper sessions, right? So let's get started by, you know, spinning things up. You know, what do you got for us today from a SQL VM perspective?
Totally. So today we'll be talking about SQL Server running in Azure Virtual Machines.
Yep.
I'm going to give a quick overview of the offering that
yep.
we have. We work very closely between the SQL Server team and the Azure team to make sure that Azure is the best platform to run SQL Server in the world.
Okay.
So today we'll be talking about some of the things that we have done together
okay.
to make the configuration, for example, and management of SQL Server as easy as possible.
Perfect. Love it.
Totally. So what we have in the screen here, for people who are not familiar with it, is the compute side of Microsoft Azure.
Yep.
Right? Inside of here, you can see we have different database server offerings. Right? And today, we'll be talking about SQL Server. So if you look at SQL Server, we have many different images available in the gallery for our customers, right?
Yeah.
And these images range from SQL Server 2008, right, for people who are still using SQL Server 2008,
yeah.
to SQL Server 2012, SQL Server 2014, and all the way to SQL Server 2016, including RC0, which is the gallery image that we added this week, actually. So
wow, okay.
we just released SQL Server 2016 RC0,
okay.
so people can go and evaluate this offering and all the cool stuff that we have done in SQL in terms of high availability
yeah.
and performance, security, etc.
Okay.
Right? We have many different types of editions as well available. So we have SQL Server Express, for example, which is a free SQL license for anybody who wants to go and do dev tests, for example,
mm-hmm.
or they want to run lightweight workloads, anything under couple of gigabytes of memory and then 10
okay.
gigabytes of storage. So if you set something small, you can do it. SQL license is free. You only pay for the compute aspect, so you only pay for that virtual machine to run, and it's like less than 8 cents an hour,
oh,
actually.
No. Okay.
Yeah, depending on what you use. Again, so we have a standard edition as well. So it starts including some basic features, for example, for high availability, higher support for memory sizes and things like that. You can have web edition, so if you want to host a web server and you
mm-hmm.
want to have a SQL database behind it, you can use this. And it's the most cost-effective way of doing that for web servers. And then we have our enterprise edition, which
right.
is the one that has all the enterprise features for, again, high availability, security, performance, etc.
Yeah, right? Hybrid, all that good stuff, yep.
So all of that is available here. We can go and show you some of the stuff that we have done lately. So we can select, for example, the SQL 2014 SP1. The other thing to mention is the same day when we release an SP version, for example, Service Pack 1 or Service Pack 2, the same day we have it available here. Same thing with CTPs, same here. We refresh these images every couple of months.
Mm-hmm.
So every couple of months, we put all the latest CUs, hotfixes, et cetera. Obviously, if there is any important security hotfix from Windows or SQL, we put it on the same day as well.
Yep.
So you
okay.
always have the guarantee that you're running with the latest bits from Microsoft.
Okay.
So what we're going to do is show you some of the experiences that we have added. So in this case, we're going to provision a SQL Server 2014 SP1 image edition enterprise. Can select the deployment model. So you remember in Azure, we have two deployment models. We started with Classic. We are moving now towards Resource Manager.
Yep, so just for those that aren't familiar with that, what's the difference between Classic and Resource Manager?
So it's just a deployment model, the programmability model that we use to refer to all the components in
okay.
Azure. Classic is the model that we started with like 3 years ago. With Resource Model now, you have, for example, fine-grained security. You can specify permissions for a specific object to a specific
okay.
role or user.
Okay.
It's a much more powerful declarative
okay.
Model.
More granular control over the environment.
Granular
thing.
Control, et cetera. Yep. And that's what we're moving towards. And that's where most of these new experiences go.
Okay.
Right? So we're going to create a new virtual machine on the resource model. Again, this is SQL 2014 Enterprise. And you can see we have the traditional blades that we have in the past. So we have basic, for example, the size of the virtual machine settings. But we have added now a new blade for SQL Server settings. right?
Okay, yep.
And this is something that the SQL Server team has added on top of Microsoft Azure,
okay.
Right? So we look at basic, it's just basic information for the virtual machine. So I can say my SQL virtual machine and some number, my administrator name, the password that I'll use to connect to the virtual machine, my subscription in Azure,
yep.
Right? The resource group, which is just a container for multiple virtual machines,
okay.
Right, so that I can delete them at the same time or stop them at the same time, etc.
Okay.
I can manage. So I'm going to say my resource group. And finally, the location, right? So we have more locations around the world than our competition combined.
Mm-hmm.
So we have.
Which is a good thing, yeah.
Which is a good thing. So we have everything from Australia, the US, Asia, Japan.
So Brazil down
there. Europe, Brazil, and everywhere you want, right?
Yep.
And obviously, even within the same country, you have multiple options available as well. So let's select West US, right? It's the closest one to where
okay.
we are right now. So we select that one. The next thing is going to be selecting the size of the virtual machine, right? So again, we have a large number of different sizes for virtual machines that range from very small virtual machines to very large virtual machines. Right, so it starts recommending you one based on the size that you select, but we're gonna see all of them. And you can start with, again, very small virtual machines to very large ones. For SQL Server, our recommendation is to start with some of these DS machines. These DS machines support premium storage, which is SSD-based storage,
okay.
Very, very fast. You know, just few millisecond latency, high IO, number of IOs, high throughput, and that's what you need for SQL Server, right? You need to be able to read and write.
Okay, is there still the, I think, was it the A series and the
yes.
D series? Okay,
so
you're recommending we at least, you know, don't even look at the A, look at the D series.
So depending on what you're doing, so if all you're doing is like some basic dev test, for example, you can start with an A, like an A1. I think it has a couple of cores and a couple of gigabytes of RAM, and it works pretty well.
Okay.
If you want to do anything in production, you probably want to start with at least DS.
Okay.
Right? Because these are the ones that support premium storage.
Right.
And again, you can start small, so you can have, for example, DS1, which is just one core and 3.5 gigabytes of RAM, something very, very small. You can go larger than that. Most of our customers today are using around DS13 and DS14. Let me see if I can find it. DS13. At least we have 13 here. So it's 8 cores, 56 gigabytes of RAM,
okay.
16 disks, right? Each of these disks, if it's premium storage, will give you like 5,000 IOPS,
yep.
200 megabytes per second, right?
So what's the difference between, like, you got a D1 and a D1 V2 here?
So the DB1 V2 is just a new generation of the original D series. It just comes with a faster CPU.
Oh, okay.
Right? It comes with a little bit more memory.
Okay.
Right? Something else to consider. For people who want to run very big production workloads, we have the GS series,
mm-hmm.
right? So you can go and look, for example, GS3, I think I have it here. Okay. So something that administrators of your Azure subscription can do is they can actually scope the size of the VMs that you can use.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to decide which sizes you can use, you can specify that in your subscription. So actually, my administrator said I cannot use GS4 and GS5 here.
Okay.
But anyway, I want to talk about that one. GS5, for example, allows you to have 32 cores. It allows you to go all the way to half a terabyte of RAM.
Wow, okay.
And 64 terabytes of disk.
Oh,
so if your administrator allows you to use that, yes, you have,
good for you.
You have a very powerful machine. That
why did we
use.
Just get a bill for it?
Exactly, right? Anyway, so for these demo purposes, we're going to go back and let's use a DS14 machine, right? Again, the 8 cores and 56 gigabytes of RAM. So we're going to select this image. And the next thing is going to be settings for the virtual machine. Right. Again, these are things related to the network, for example, the type of storage, a couple of security settings. These are still not specific to SQL, but are still very relevant because obviously SQL Server needs to live inside of the virtual machine.
Okay.
So the first aspect is the storage, right? And this is where, depending on whether you're doing dev tests or production, you may look at standard storage versus premium storage.
Okay.
Right. Again, premium storage is SSD based. You have an SSD or a set of SSDs in the backend, but also the physical machine has some local SSDs that it uses as a read cache.
Okay.
It's important for SQL every time that you execute a query, those results are stored locally in the cache if they don't fit in memory, and then SQL can read them locally, right? It's a lot
okay.
faster to read them locally
yep.
than to read them from the storage. Next, the set of things that your traditional virtual machines use, like storage accounts, virtual networks, a public IP address. So by default, you get a new DHCP public IP address, right? It's assigned to you, and you can use that to connect over the internet. You can always use a static IP address inside of your VNet if you want to do that.
Okay.
And monitoring. So you can enable or disable monitoring, and this will basically enable performance counters inside of the virtual machine that will be tracked by Azure and is stored into your Azure storage account so that you can later track all of this in a nice reporting chart.
Is it metrics against the from the virtual machine itself and not SQL specific or just the virtual machine? Or
both.
Or both.
Both. So we have actually added the option, and I'll show you that, the option for SQL Server counters. So if you enable this monitoring counters, you will be able to, you'll be able to look at the SQL performance counters as well.
Okay.
Right. Okay, so I'm going to click OK here, right? And we're going to look into the SQL Server settings. So the SQL Server settings are the ones that we have added from the SQL Server team, right? And some of these are things that are very, very important for customers. And you know, sometimes they need to configure them, and it takes a lot of time. So we try to simplify this.
Okay.
The first one is the SQL Server connectivity. And this is, how do you want to connect to SQL Server? You can specify different options. You can do it, for example, locally, which means I want to connect just inside of the virtual machine to my SQL instance.
Yeah, so I'm already pinned into the virtual machine and connecting from within that.
Exactly. Right? Or private, which means just within your virtual network, which is the most secure setting, right? So you create a virtual network, and only virtual machines inside of that network can connect to you.
Okay.
Or on premises, if you have set up a VPN tunnel, that means that only your machines from your company can connect over the VPN tunnel.
Okay.
Or you can select over the internet, right? So it's the least secure option, but it's also the most easiest to use, right? So if you just want to do depth test, for example, and connect from SSMS over the internet to your SQL Server machine, then you can
select that. If I want to connect from SQL Server Management Studio on my from my laptop into that, I'd have to pick public.
You pick public.
Okay.
Right. Okay. Next thing is the SQL port. This is where SQL is going to be listening. So the SQL port is by default 1433. SQL authentication. So by default, we only allow Windows authentication, which means only Windows credentials inside of the virtual machine or your domain are accessible. But you can enable SQL authentication. So if you want to connect, again, for example, over the internet, right, from your own domain or even from a work group into that virtual machine, you can enable SQL authentication so that that Windows login that we created in the beginning is made a login in SQL, and you can connect to SQL using that login.
Okay, perfect.
All right, so by default, it assigns my Windows login here, the same password that I specified. Next thing, this is very, very cool. It allows to configure and optimize the SQL Server machine for a specific workload. So what you can do is configure the storage, and you can say, how many IOPS do you need? So if you know from your on-premise environment, because you have some performance counters, for example, for the storage, you know how many IOPS you're running. So if you run any of those tools, like IOMeter, for example, that tells you how many IOPS you're running on-premises, you can very quickly just go and select the same here.
What's the difference between this configuration? Because when you picked up the D13,
right,
it had specific, right? Does it now allow, are you changing those?
No. So what happens here is you can scale up to the limits of the machine, right? You can easily scale up to that. If you want to select more than what this virtual machine allows you to do, you can go and select a bigger one and then come back here and select within the scope of that machine.
Okay.
So for example.
So what you, on the D13, what it showed, that's the max it can do.
Correct.
But it's not showing, it's not, by default, it's not running the max here.
Correct. So by default we start with something that works for most applications, medium-sized applications, which is 5,000 IOPS and 200 megabytes per second.
Gotcha,
right? If you want, you can go and increase that, right? So you can go, for example, all the way to what this virtual machine, which is a DS13, allows me to do, which is 25,000 IOPS, right?
Yep.
And 256 megabytes per second. Maximum storage it's allowed me to do is 16 terabytes.
Okay.
Right? So I can select what to do here. If I need more, I can go, for example, and select the GS5 that we talked about.
Yep.
And the GS5 will allow me to do 80,000 IOPS.
Gotcha, okay.
And it will allow me to do 2,000 megabytes per second.
Okay. So when you picked the D13, it said your cost is this much for the max amount. If you run less than that, are you still paying for that max, or how does the pricing work there?
So the pricing that you saw was for the compute, was for the virtual machine itself.
Yeah, okay.
Right, and that's
but the IOPS are different from that.
The IOPS are different.
Yeah, okay,
right?
Okay. Yep.
So what happens is, you select the number of IOPS that you need and the amount of megabytes per second.
Yep.
Based on that, we define how many data disks you need. Mm-hmm. Right? So each data disk will give you, depending on the size of the disk, like 5,000 IOPS and 200 megabytes per second.
Okay.
So for example, in this case, to achieve 20,000 IOPS, I'm going to need 4 data disks.
Okay.
So these are disks that are going to be attached to my virtual machine.
And we'll do attach those automatically.
And it will attach them automatically.
Okay, cool.
Right. The other nice things that it will do is it will create a storage pool for me in Windows. And the storage pool is a virtual disk on top of these physical disks. And the data files and the log files for SQL will be stored in that storage pool. And what this means is SQL will have access to all the combined aggregate number of IOPS and bandwidth in the machine. So traditionally in the past, you have to strip your data files kill file groups and put them in different disks and all that. All that is gone here. It's very, very simple.
Okay.
You can still do it if you want,
right?
But if you can, you can just simply allow the virtual machine to do it for you.
Okay. So, and so this is almost a completely hands-off. You're doing a lot of the configuration for us, right? I can still go in and do more if I need to, but you know, you're by configuring here, you're just going, here's what I need, and it'll create all the data disks and everything for me.
It does everything for you.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that.
We tried to really simplify this.
Yeah.
By the way, no other cloud provider will do this for you. Like if you go and try to get SQL or any other database in anywhere else, they'll give you a virtual machine, and after that is your own work.
Yeah.
You need to spend a few hours or a couple of days doing it.
Yeah.
All right, so the other thing that you can do is optimize the storage. So you can specify what type of workload you're going to be running on the machine.
Mm-hmm.
You have by default general, which means I really don't know. You know, it could be a little bit of a ish. But if you know what specifically, we'll actually do additional optimizations on top of that. So if you select transactional processing, for example, we'll configure the virtual machine and SQL to optimize transaction commits. That means try to commit those transactions as soon as possible.
Okay.
And for example, the stripe size that we'll use for the storage pool, so that what defines basically the size of IOPS that SQL is going to do will be targeted to OLTP.
Okay.
Which in this case is going to be 64 kilobytes, for example, compared to, for data warehouse, it's going to be 256 kilobytes to read and write more from the storage. So depending on whether you're optimizing transaction latency versus reading more from the storage, you can select those. So let's select transactional processing, you know, classic OLTP system.
Mm.
Some other things that we have done, automated patching. So by default, we'll patch SQL Server and the Windows operating system inside of the machine on Sundays at 2 a.m. in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
You can change that, or you can disable it if you want. So you can select any type of the day or daily, for example. You can specify when do you want the maintenance to start,
mm-hmm.
like 2, 3, 1 in the morning, etc. And how long do you want it to take, right? It can go from 30 minutes to 180 minutes.
Yeah, okay.
Right? What this means is during that period of time, we're going to patch Windows and SQL. If we can't finish the patching, right, because, for example, there is some additional things that we need to download and we don't have time, we're going to stop that patching at that time, and then in the next patching window, we're going to continue.
Okay.
Right. And this guarantees that your SQL workload is always going to be running.
Oh, okay, right? Cool. That's nice.
Yeah, definitely something nice. You don't have to think about that. Next thing, automated backup. Again, something else that we have simplified. So, you know, something that SQL DBAs need to do all the time, like configure backups. They can still go and manually configure backups plans, for example, if they want, or they can script it any way they want. But we try to simplify it if they want to do it. And we have this option called automated backup. You can enable it. And what this will do is...
Is this essentially running backup to cloud?
It is.
Is it?
It is.
It's awesome.
Yes. Cool. Yeah, good catch.
Yeah. Okay.
So basically what this is configuring is inside of SQL Server something we call managed backup, which is the one that backups to Azure storage.
Yep.
Right? You can specify the retention period. So depending on how many days you need your backups to be available, you can specify that. And what SQL will do is, depending on the workload, how much log is generating, we will take backups more or less.
Oh, yeah. This is the one where it's basically, so there's the manual backup to cloud, then there's the managed backup, where it's basically looking at what's the activity of your database, and based on that, how frequently we'll back up.
Exactly.
Right, okay. Oh, that's cool.
So, yeah, so you want to just, you know, completely forget about having to manage all of this, let SQL do it.
Okay.
Your backups will be stored in your storage account. Will guarantee a transactional consistent log backup chain. So you know that for some reason, if at some point by mistake you delete one of these backups, we can always go and recreate it and have access to the whole chain. You can also encrypt your backups, right, for additional security. So you can specify a password, and what this will do is create an encryption key in SQL so that only SQL can go and encrypt this these backups.
Cool. Right? Okay.
And that's it. Basically, we click OK. This will show you the summary of all the stuff that we have done. And you know, when you see the summary, you can think about how long it will take you to go and manually do it, right? Yeah, in a traditional environment.
Yeah.
So yeah, we have a virtual machine in West US. It's a DS13, again, 8 cores with premium storage on top of SSDs. Mm-hmm. So very fast storage. SQL authentication is open on public port 1433. It's all optimized for transactional processing, so I didn't have to do that. I have 4 terabytes on the storage, 20,000 IOPS. Patching is enabled automatically on Sundays at 2 in the morning. Backups is enabled, so I don't have to think about that. My backups are stored for 24 days. Backup encryption is enabled, etc. So I can say click, okay.
And so probably, without all the explanation, you probably could have done this in 5 minutes or less, right?
Correct.
But to do this all manually, once you spin up a plain vanilla, you know, SQL VM, and then go into all of that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that, doing it manually will take you some time, right?
Yeah.
And if you do it in other clouds, that's what it'll take.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So I have an example of a virtual machine that I already provisioned with SQL Server. Just wanted to show you how it looks.
Okay.
So we have the machine here. It's provisioned in West US. Again, I think this is a DS14 machine, I believe, with 16 cores. And what I wanted to show you is this machine will have an IP associated with it. And it's the IP that is assigned to me by Azure, right? So it's a DS12, actually. And this is the IP that I get assigned to it, 14.112, et cetera, right? And that's the IP that I can use to connect to the machine, right?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I can connect to this machine through RDP. So I can select connect here, and then it will connect to the machine. And we can do that. Right. So I'm going to specify just the name of the Windows login, my password, and it connects to the machine.
Okay.
Right. And obviously, I have SQL Server already running there. Right. And everything that you know and love about SQL Server is here. 100% compatibility, so your application will just work.
Right? Yeah.
There's nothing new. Some of the cool things that we're talking about. So if you look at the storage, for example, of the virtual machine. You'll see how we have a storage pool here, which is already configured, right? And this storage pool is created on top of 2 physical disks, right? And these are 1 terabyte disk each. So what means, we have a single logical disk in the machine that SQL can use to store the data and log files, and you don't have to think about that anymore, right? So we have here the logical disk F and my data and log files living there.
Okay.
And that's what I can use. So again, this is the IP address 14.112, etc. I can go into my local laptop, right, and I can specify the same connection here. Right?
So okay, so you connected via IP address.
I connect, okay. Yes. You can always create a DNS name if you want, mm-hmm. right, and that will be associated with IP, and you can use a name over the internet if you want. Or you can just do it like that, right? And basically, you know, you can just go and select like any statement here, right? Like just inserting a bunch of ones in the system. Right.
Yeah.
And then we can go back to the portal, and here it'll show me some monitoring information. Right. For example, for CPU usage, so you see CPU percentage is very slow. It will start increasing as I start running some of these things. Reads and writes. Right. So this is how many kilobytes per second you're reading and writing.
Okay.
Right. The other nice thing that we have is you can go and add SQL counters. That's something else that we were talking about. So you can edit the chart. You can add those counters as well. So we have added all the counters that are traditionally used by SQL administrators. So things like transactions per second, transaction latency, number of deadlocks, number of connections, and things like that. So you'll see here. So we have, there's a large number.
There's a lot.
a lot of stuff that you can look at. Everything from .NET to ASP if you need it. Obviously, things for CPU and memory and disk and all those stuff, right? But then you have all the SQL counters. So SQL CPU percentage, batch requests per second, error rates, log file, user connection, transaction rate, etc. So all of the things that you have traditionally used, you can go and start tracking. The other nice things that you can do is you can add alerts on top of these things, right? So you can specify, for example, a email address that will get an alert if the CPU usage goes beyond 80% or 90%, or if your transactions per second start decreasing for some reason. So you can specify here what is the basically the resource that you're going to track. Is it CPU or memory, etc.? And then you can specify the condition if it's greater than some threshold, and specify the email or emails that are going to receive this. So again, all of this monitoring and management becomes easier and easier just because you're running in Azure.
Okay.
So basically all that is just for the single virtual machine experience, right? Something else that we can quickly look at is you can configure always on. So for people who have done always on, basically that's the high availability solution for SQL, right? It guarantees that SQL can always have one or more secondary replicas so they can fail over in case there is an issue. And a failover stay like less than 10 seconds. So you can go and configure that as well. It's very easy to find. You can, again, go into compute, and then we have it there, right? We have the option, so you can see all. And it's basically called SQL Server Always On, right? Yep. And that's basically a template that is built on ARM that will allow you to configure.
Oh, yeah, okay, yep.
So let's see. So we have it here, for example. So say SQL Server Always On Cluster. So for people who need the highest level of availability, right? So we're talking about.
Now, does this build it all up, this availability? Does this always build the cluster up in the cloud, 100% up in the cloud?
It's 100%
okay.
in the cloud.
All right.
Yes, and it uses this basic concept from Azure, like availability sets, for example, to guarantee that the SQL Server replicas are in different racks and different upgrade domains and all that.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you when you find this template, if you look at the picture, you'll basically see that this is the deployment that we create for you. So we create two availability sets. We have your two SQL replicas with one file share witness.
Yep.
This is to guarantee quorum in the system.
Mm-hmm.
And optionally, you can get also domain controllers. In case that you haven't provisioned domain controllers and you want to have high availability for your domain controllers, you can provision one and a replica for the domain controller.
So by default, it'll create the two SQL replicas and the file share witness.
Exactly.
But optionally, it'll go, hey, do you don't have a domain controller, do you want to create a domain controller?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. So something else that you can do, you know, for people who have configured manually always on, and especially if you have to add the domain controllers, it'll take you a few hours doing that, right? If you know very well how to do it. And this will simplify the process because, again, in like 5 minutes, you can specify just the arguments, and it will go and do it for you.
So almost the same thing we just did the last time, right?
So it's pretty much the same thing. Just a couple of things are going to change. I'm going to do it quickly. So user password, again, my resource group, my always on, right? Same, the location, right? And the same thing for domain and networks. The only added thing is you can specify the domain, for example, that you want to create, right? So you can, by default, it creates some dummy domain, but you can specify the domain name that you want, the virtual network name that you want to create or reuse, and that's it. And then you specify the availability group settings, which is what provides availability for SQL.
Yep.
Right? And you specify, for example, the name of the availability group, which is just the name of the group that fails over together, the listener, which is what your applications will use to connect to your primary replica.
Okay.
So irrespective of where the primary lives, all your clients can connect to it using this and the port for the listener. And everything else is the same thing. So you'll select the size of the virtual machine again, and then some of the settings like storage, same thing.
So nothing else.
Select the size, for example, for the virtual machines again. So remember, we have DS or we have GS for production. And if you want to use something for dev test, you can start with an A, for example, or a D. So let's say we want to use DS3, a 4-core machine. Right, and then it'll be same thing for the file share witness. So you don't really need much for the file share witness. You can start with like an A1, or a D1.
Okay.
You can start with something small. Basically, all it will do is your machines will connect to it to guarantee that you have quorum in the system. All right. So let's make sure that this loads. Just taking a bit of time.
That's okay.
So what do you think so far? Does that make sense?
Yep. Yeah. Perfect. Yeah, this is awesome.
So yeah, you have again the different offerings here, so you can select like DS1.
I remember there used to be a blog post that when you and I think I emailed you about it. If you copy and paste that blog post into a Word document, it was like 100 pages, right? And it walked you through all of this, because right. we didn't have this at the time, right? It was this right, massive yeah. blog post.
Exactly,
right? Yeah. And this is yeah. like, oh, where was this when I needed it?
Exactly, yeah. So right. he's trying to really simplify it.
Yeah.
And that's it. I mean, there's a couple of final things that you can specify. You know, for example, because SQL is going to run in a domain here,
right?
And you have multiple SQL servers, you can specify you want the account that will be used inside of the domain to run SQL Server. You can just leave the defaults if you want, probably the easiest way, or you can change if you want. This is the password for a SQL Server account. The same thing that we looked at before, patching.
Yep, patching, yep.
And all the stuff, so exactly the same thing. You can specify the version of SQL, so you can do SQL 12, or 14, or 16.
Okay.
And that's it. It will basically give me the same summary. Right, but this time it's for a high available configuration for SQL. Right, so all the stuff is here, right? All the information for the sizes of the virtual machine,
yeah.
The listener, the region, etc. And it's running just some final validation. This is to guarantee that when this template is executed on runtime, everything is going to succeed. Right, so you just run some final validation
okay.
in the environment. Something nice that you can do is you can actually download the template.
I was just going to ask you about that, yeah.
Yeah, so this will basically generate the ARM template, which is just a JSON template that you can execute through PowerShell, for example.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, you select your arguments, you create the template, and then you can just programmatically repeat that multiple times, right?
Okay, so yeah, so if I want to programmatically, you know, spin up and tear this down, I can do this through PowerShell, through the ARM template.
Correct.
Okay.
And that's it, basically. So you click OK, right? And it'll basically just ask me, are you sure you want to do this? And you notice that the template can provision multiple VMs,
yep.
you know, because it's just not one VM. In this case, because I'm asking for a domain, it's going to be five VMs, right?
Five, yep.
Three for the replicas and two for the domains.
Mm-hmm.
So just tell me, make sure that you're aware of that and you're fine. I say, yeah, I'm good. So I create, and then
it goes off and spins
it. It goes and
okay.
does it, right? It's probably take like an hour. I mean, there's a bunch of virtual machines that we need to do and a lot of automated configuration that
yeah.
we need to do, but it will do it all for you without you having to worry. You can go and have a coffee, you know, maybe have lunch, come back.
Yeah, right.
And
okay.
then you have your always on configuration
yeah.
set up. And this is what you get in the end. So you get all of these resources. These are the machines. You get the domain controller, primary, secondary, your cluster, file share witness, your two SQL Server replicas. You get a couple of load balances. This is how we implement the listener. Right?
Oh,
this
yeah.
is
okay.
how you can connect to the machine inside of the network or over the internet if you want. And the availability sets that guarantee that these machines are in different racks, so they're
yep.
not impacted by
okay.
the,
perfect.
By issues. And that's it, basically. I mean, that's what I wanted to show today.
Okay.
You know, how easy the configuration and management yeah. experience is.
Let me ask you kind of a potentially loaded question, because you know one of the benefits of doing you know SQL in a VM is kind of a DR scenario, right? So
right.
I can create, spin up a SQL VM domain, join that to my on-prem domain,
totally.
And do you know always on availability groups.
Yep.
Will there come, and I know there's more configuration you have to do on-prem, you know, to
right.
range on that, but will there be the ability to, you know, have an option in the marketplace to go, hey, let me spin one of those up and do everything for me, and then it make it easier, or, it'll make it easier for me to, you know, not have to do all that work, right?
Correct. Yeah, so we plan to do that at some point. The first step was in Management Studio.
Okay.
So in Management Studio, starting in SQL 2014, we have a wizard. It's called the Azure Replica Wizard.
Yep.
And what you can do is you execute that locally on premises against your availability group that you have already created.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can add a replica in Azure, and this will go and configure everything that is required. So you will go and provision the machine, add it to your domain, your cluster,
okay.
start synchronization of the log between them, and do everything for you. The only requirement today, which eventually is going to go away, is the VPN tunnel. So you need to have a VPN tunnel configured in advance.
Yeah, prior to, I was going to ask that. You have to have that all that pre-configured in advance.
You
okay.
need to have the VPN tunnel. Something that we'll look at later with SQL, sorry, with Windows 2016 is it allows you to now have Windows clusters without across different domains. You don't need to have the same domain.
Mm-hmm.
You don't even need to have a domain anymore. So you can have like cluster
wow.
nodes
yeah.
that are part of the same cluster, but they could be like in different
work groups. Okay.
So that will remove the requirement of the VPN tunnel because now the machines don't have to be in the same domain. All
okay.
they need is just TCP/IP connectivity, and that's it. And
just here's my there they are and
yeah, they'll authenticate with certificates and that's it. So that's coming Windows 16, and as we, you know, make progress into that wizard and we start enhancing it, with some of these options, it's going to be even easier because you won't have to even configure the tunnel. All you have to do is run this SMS and it will go and configure the whole thing for you.
Perfect. Awesome. Cool. Luce, this is fantastic. Wonderful. Thank you so much for coming. I think there's some topics that we can drill into, like, you know, troubleshooting and things later on. But I think this is a great, hey, how do I spin this up? What are the options? This has been fantastic. So awesome. Thanks for coming. Appreciate your time. Hey, everybody. Thanks for watching and we'll see you next time.